Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will talk with physician and nutritionist Dr. John Scharfenberg, MD. Dr. Scharfenberg is a professor of nutrition at Loma Linda University. He will talk to us about a major breakthrough in the world of health. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, here's a study that shows that vegetarian and vegan diets protect against cancers. Vegetarian and vegan diets protect against cancer compared with non-vegetarian diets, according to a new study published by the American Association of Cancer Research. Researchers analyzed 69,120 participants as part of the Adventist Health Study 2 and found that beyond the reduced risk of overall cancer, vegetarian and vegan diets significantly reduced the risk of gastrointestinal cancers, stomach and colon cancers, pancreatic cancers, and others, and female-specific cancers such as breast, uterine, and ovarian cancers, respectively. Well, here's another study that shows that there is interest in enzymes and pineapple. Researchers the conventional wisdom has long maintained that fruit enzymes like bromelain in pineapple do not survive the journey through the digestive tract due to gastric acidity. In other words, all of us enjoying fresh pineapple to aid digestion after a meal may be nibbling on wishful thinking. But recent research proves the power and perseverance of bromelain, at least in mice. Duke scientists found that the enzymes in pineapple makes it to the colon intact, free to bestow anti-inflammatory benefits that may play a role in preventing ulcerative colitis. Emerging research continues to build the case that bromelain and other fruit enzymes like kiwi's actinidin and papaya's papain may potentially have human health benefits as well. We'll be right back after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And our question for today is, which green vegetables are good calcium sources if you don't drink milk? Well, kale, collards, napa cabbage, and broccoli are excellent sources of calcium. Because they don't contain cholesterol or saturated fat, I recommend these sources of calcium over dairy products as a healthier choice.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
Our featured guest today on Health and Longevity is Dr. John Scharfenberg, MD. Dr. Scharfenberg has been a leader in the field of nutrition, preventive medicine, and health education for decades. He is both a medical doctor and a nutritionist, and Dr. Scharfenberg received his medical degree from Loma Linda University School of Medicine and his Master of Public Health degree in nutrition from Harvard University. And on a personal note, I'd like to mention that Dr. Scharfenberg has been one of my professors, was a graduate student, actually, at Loma Linda University School of Public Health, and he has been a longtime colleague, mentor, friend of mine for many years. And Dr. Scharfenberg, thank you so much for being with us today on Health and Longevity.
Well, it's good to be with you.
Well, Dr. Scharfenberg, we're going to talk about something very important today, and that is a major breakthrough in the world of health. Let's talk about that.
Okay, you know, there have been special times that there were breakthroughs. For example, when Pasteur did his experiments, we discovered the germ theory.
Yes.
That was a major breakthrough. And then Fleming comes along and discovers penicillin. That's a major breakthrough.
Right.
And now here we have another one. It's not being popularized like it should be, but it's going on right now. We have learned that you could lower your heart attack risk 80%, your risk of stroke by 80%, your risk of getting type 2 diabetes by 88%. There's no medicine that can do that good. There's no other medical intervention that can do that good. Now, how do they do that? It's primordial prevention. Now, that may be a new term for you. Secondary prevention is when you take a person who's had a heart attack and treat him so he doesn't get another heart attack.
Right.
Primary prevention is when you treat a person for high blood pressure or high blood cholesterol so he doesn't get the first heart attack. But primordial prevention is one step back before that. It's living a lifestyle so you don't get the risk factors in the first place. Now, what are these risk factors? There's seven or eight big ones they're talking about.
Okay, let's go through each one of those.
Now, by the way, how do we know that we can do this? They have followed thousands of people for many years, and they find out people who live this lifestyle don't get the heart attacks.
Okay, let's talk about that lifestyle. So how do we live a lifestyle that's going to prevent these diseases without the use of drugs and medications?
Okay, there's seven or eight big points. Let's just list them, first of all, and
okay.
Then we'll go into each one. But first one is don't smoke.
Okay.
Cut down or out of the alcohol. And thirdly, exercise every day. Don't get overweight. Use more fruits and vegetables. And then don't get high blood pressure or high cholesterol. But if you live the lifestyle that we're talking about, you are not likely to get high blood pressure and high blood cholesterol.
Correct.
So those are the big risk factors.
Well, let's take them step by step. Let's talk about smoking first.
Now, you know, in the United States, in Western countries like Great Britain, Australia, industrialized countries, they have knocked their smoking rate down quite nicely. We have probably only about 16% of Americans who are still smoking, adults. That's pretty good. But the world as a whole is increasing, particularly in these developing countries. For example, one out of five 13 to 15-year-olds is smoking today around the world. And the World Health Organization is estimating that by the year 2020, we will have as many as 10 million dying every year because of smoking.
And you're seeing this with the young people particularly?
Yes, the young people overseas in these developing countries is very bad. They think it's smart to smoke.
Well, you know, I was in Argentina a few years ago, and there was people out on the streets giving free packs of Marlboro cigarettes out to everyone as promotion.
Yes. Now, I was in Slovakia last year. I'm going back there on my way right now. You know, one-third of the doctors are still smoking.
Really?
Well, of course, they were caught when they were teenagers.
Right.
And so that smoking is a primary thing we got to do something about. It even increases the risk of colon cancer. It increases the risk of prostate cancer they've now discovered. So besides the lung cancer.
Okay, so what do people need to do to quit that cigarette?
Well, we've got to really help them to get off of cigarettes. It's not easy.
Right.
But there are people in the world who are specialists on designing programs for various nations to show them how to get a program to get people to stop smoking. And I think we need to get these people working in some of these countries, particularly Eastern Europe, where they are smoking a terrible lot.
Well, here in the United States, it's primarily the young people that are kind of rebellious that are wanting to smoke. And then it's the hardcore smokers that just have difficulty quitting. Isn't that who's left, really?
Yeah. Here's the problem. If we will tax the cigarettes like we're doing, keep raising the taxes, that has been the most effective at lowering the use of tobacco.
It's just too expensive.
You know, but I think we can have more legislation. For example, should a person get through medical school and graduate if he smokes? Seems to me he would be a poor doctor if he's still smoking. It seems to me even to get a high school diploma, one of the requirements should be you've learned not to smoke.
Okay, let's see if that works. Well, let's go into alcohol, because alcohol is another substance that's abused today. Let's talk about how that affects our health.
Yes. You know, alcohol, we now know, just a single drink every day will increase your cancer risk.
Yes.
So we need to do something about it. It tends to increase your systolic blood pressure. It increases rectal cancer. We need to do something about the alcohol. Now, a lot of people have been fooled by hearing the idea from the newspapers that, say, they did a study which showed a decreased heart attack risk.
Right.
Well, the Centers for Disease Control questions all that. They said those studies weren't done well enough in comparing the two groups in all factors. They don't believe it's really true.
But you have doctors out there today saying that, oh, you should drink a little wine every day.
I know. But let me tell you what the scientists, top authorities in this question, are actually saying. They're saying, make clear to everybody that alcohol has no net benefits to health. And they say there's little justification to recommend alcohol as a cardioprotective strategy.
Well, what do you say to those people that talk about that French paradox, where they drink alcohol and they have less heart disease and so forth?
Well, I don't think really that is really true. Now, we're told here by the authorities, no patient should be advised to start drinking or to increase alcohol consumption. So the top authorities are saying this. If you never have drunk, you should never start.
Okay.
If you are drinking, cut down. And we know every drink knocks out a brain cell. Social drinkers, for example, have 21% less Purkinje cells in the cerebellum than the non-drinkers. So even if it did help heart disease, but I don't think it does, even if it did, all scientific groups are saying there's too many bad effects of it. We should never recommend it for anybody.
Well, I know in France they talk about the benefits and so forth of it. They also have a very high rate of alcoholism over there.
Yes, that's right.
Well, let's get into activity and exercise. The role exercise and fitness plays in this breakthrough in medicine and keeping people healthy.
I think exercise is probably one of the single greatest physical factors. For example, I have outlived both my brothers by considerable years. And I think the major difference was that I exercised more. I chopped the wood, split the wood, because we heated our house with wood. I grew a lot of crops and gardening, and so I did a lot of exercise, and I think that was the major difference. Now, we feel that there are many people dying just because of lack of exercise. For example, even the overweight people. Stephen Blair, the top authority in the United States on this thing, says that if you compare the overweight people who exercise compared to those who don't, it's the lack of exercise that's increasing their risk of dying prematurely. So exercise is important. And to get out of this unfit category, you just have to exercise 30 minutes a day. That's not too much.
And even walking is a good source of exercise.
Walking is an excellent source, yeah. And so we need to do something about the exercise thing. But in our country, we have been promoting exercise for now some, 20, 30 years?
Yes.
And people aren't doing much more exercise.
Yeah, I remember the heydays of the aerobic movement with Dr. Kenneth Cooper. He was out getting lots of people running and walking.
Yes. But, you know, as a whole, on the average, our population isn't doing much more exercise than they did when we started this promotion.
Okay.
Which is too bad. We've got to figure out what should be done to get them moving.
Well, why do you think people are so inactive today?
Well, you know, TV is one of the big things. They're glued to the TV set. There's more office jobs rather than jobs like farming,
mm-hmm.
which require activity. We drive to the grocery store when it's just, you know, three blocks away.
Yes.
Things like that. And we've got to figure out how to get people exercising.
Now, there have been some studies showing a direct relationship to longevity in exercise. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, yes. There's quite a few things. In fact, they say every hour you exercise adds 2 hours to your life, according to the Harvard alumni
right.
study.
Right.
That's pretty good.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. So here I am, 89 years of age. People don't believe I'm that old, but I'm getting around like a young person. I can move because I've exercised through the years.
And you're still chopping wood up there.
Well, I'm not doing so much of that stuff like I used to do,
uh-huh.
but walking an hour a day at least is what you ought to do.
Right.
And so I am doing that.
Well, today we are facing a major obesity crisis in America today, and particularly what's sad, it's among our young people, just little kids. Let's talk about the role overweight and obesity play in health and longevity.
Well, obesity is a big problem. Two-thirds of our population is overweight. About half of those are obese, and that's terrible. We're a bad example for the whole world in that respect. I go to these other countries in Eastern Europe, and they say, hey, why do you talk about overweight? Your country, your people are very much overweight. And that's true. We are.
Yes.
And we got to do something about that early in life. Preventing it is better than trying to cure it once you've got the problem. So this is kind of an exciting situation. We've got to really help people on this. It's difficult once you gain the weight to lose it. It's very difficult.
Let's talk about some dietary ways to avoid overweight.
Okay. Now, one thing I think is exercise, but the major thing is how we eat.
Right.
Now, exercise will keep you from regaining the weight. Exercise increases your basal metabolic rate, increases your metabolism. That's very important. And it keeps your muscle, which increases the basal metabolic rate. So I think that's very important. But the most important thing in losing weight is the eating. And there are a lot of things we can do. I think the people who eat the more fat in the diet, they tend to be more overweight. In countries where they have a higher fat intake, they're more overweight.
Right.
I think the snacking business, you know, if people stop snacking, I think that would take care of two-thirds of the problem that people have with their overweight.
Well, that's powerful. Two-thirds of the overweight could be related to snacking.
That's
eating
right.
in between meals, those junk snacks that people are eating.
And the kind of snacks they're providing today has more calories per unit. I mean, I should say they're calorie density foods. There's more calories in a smaller space. Than there ever was before.
Right.
So when they eat these snacky foods, they're getting a lot more calories than they used to. So I think avoiding the snacks is one of the important things. And then, of course, there are what we call empty calories, things that don't have vitamins or minerals in connection with them.
Right.
And that would be sugar, for example. Let's get rid of that stuff. All these soft drinks, for example, they're not any good for us. We can forget those kinds of things. I know of people who are running TV programs on this question, and they won't bring, say, any juice into their house. When you're juicing stuff, you can get a lot more calories so fast.
Right.
Eat the whole orange instead of the orange juice would be better for you.
Now, let's go to the other point that you brought up, and that's eating more fruits and vegetables and less meat. How is that impacting our
yes,
health and longevity?
It's interesting. They say we need a better diet. And the way they say it is, eat more fruits and vegetables. Now, you can't go to any country like the United States, where they're already very much overweight, and tell them to eat something more and make them more overweight. You got to first tell them what they should eat less of. And there's two categories of foods they should eat less of. One is sugar. Now, it's very interesting. The American Heart Association has made recommendations on this. Just in recent years, they're saying no more than 6 teaspoons of added sugar per day for a woman and no more than 9 for men. That's pretty good. So that's something we got to do, is cut down the sugar. The second big thing is the meat. The meat is high in fats, high in cholesterol, causing heart attacks, high in saturated fat. It's very interesting that the World Cancer Research Fund in London has spent time and studied 7,000 scientific studies. They reviewed them. These 7,000 studies, and they show that intestinal cancer is increased so much by the use of meat, particularly processed meat. And so they're telling people, don't ever eat processed meat. If you're eating it now, stop, and don't ever use it again. Then they come to the red meats, and they say, look, if you eat red meats, you could have 500 grams a week, but the community as a whole should have no more than 300 grams.
Mm-hmm.
What do they mean by that? How do they allow people to eat 500 grams when they say the community as a whole should have no more than 300?
Doesn't make sense.
Well, I think what they're saying is there are people in the communities who are sensible enough not to eat any, so that would bring the average down. But we know that even red meats increase the intestinal cancer. Even the fish, poultry, the white meats, increase intestinal cancer. So what we've got to do is do something about the meat issue. Now, the big EPIC study over in Europe showed that the vegetarians had 32% lower risk of having a heart attack, heart disease, than the non-vegetarians. So that's something we need to be promoting. Now, so many people are promoting, say, less salt and less this and less that. They should be promoting more of a vegetarian diet.
Well, that leads into the other point you brought up. Let's talk about high blood pressure, which is a major problem with a lot of Americans.
Yes, high blood pressure is a big problem. And, of course, salt is one of the issues there. Now, there's been an argument about that. You know, Bloomberg in New York City is trying to say, hey, let's cut way back on the salt.
That's right.
The DASH program was quite good. This doctor from Harvard, Dr. Sachs, that did that study, did an excellent study. That's the best scientific basis we have for lowering our salt intake. Now, if we take how much we're using per day now, about 8.3 to 8.5 grams of the equivalent of salt, and 90% of our sodium is in the form of sodium chloride. So if we see what we've got now, and we cut down to the upper limit of what the authorities are saying we should have, like 5.75 grams a day, 6 grams would be a teaspoon. If we cut down, we'd lower our blood pressure on average of about 2.1 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
But if we lower it to where the Heart Association says we really should be, down to 3 or 3.75 grams of salt a day, which is depending on age, we would decrease our blood pressure by about 4.6 millimeters. In other words, if we go much, much lower than the acceptable high level, we would do much better at lowering our risk of disease. But you see, the people who really look at all these scientific studies, the Cochrane database, for example, they're the scientific group that looks at them, and we kind of consider them the gold standard. They say, look, it's not going to do much to lower our risk of disease in this country if we lower our salt intake. You know why? It's because people aren't going to lower it that much. Because the food industry is putting it into the food. And they're the ones that would have to lower an awful lot for the people to actually lower their intake of sodium. And I think it's going to be very difficult to get it to lower that much. I think we should still recommend it, but the vegetarian diet, for example, is going to do a lot more in reducing heart attack than talking about lowering the salt.
Let's go on to, we have about a minute or so left, Dr. Scharfenberg, and that's elevated serum cholesterol. And I know you and I have worked together on that in educating people about lowering their cholesterol. How big a factor is this?
Well, I think this is a huge factor, this serum cholesterol business. Now, we got several aspects of it. I don't worry about total cholesterol anymore at all. I'm worried about the LDL cholesterol.
Okay, that's the bad cholesterol.
That's the bad one. Now, the HDL cholesterol is a good one. And we thought that we could get people who had low levels to raise it, and that would lower their heart attack risk. Well, they did that, but it didn't lower the risk. It seems like it is a risk factor if you have low levels, but it's a genetic thing. Now, exercise will help to raise your HDL, but we know how many miles a day you'd have to go, or how many miles a week you'd have to go to raise it one little bit, you know?
Yes.
1 milligram. And I figured mine was so low, I would have to run 4 marathons a week to raise it to where it ought to be. Well, now that's a little too much.
Right. But
you see, it's a genetic thing mainly. And now, if it's a genetic problem that is so bad, then why haven't I, before I got to be 89, had some heart problem?
Right.
You see? So I think that's not the biggest problem, but the LDL cholesterol is a bad thing.
Yes, it is.
And what is it that raises it? It's the cholesterol in the diet and the saturated fat in the diet, which is mainly animal products. 100% of our cholesterol in the diet comes from animal products, and about 2/3 of our saturated fat is coming from animal products. So there again, it shows that we need to cut down on these animal products.
Okay, Dr. Scharfenberg, you know, these things you're talking about today is truly a major breakthrough in world health. We need to adopt these things. And how do we get the medical profession, how do we get our society to be more aware of this and take advantage of these things that we just talked about?
Well, you know, the American Heart Association has a goal. They say less than 5% are heart healthy now living this way. They said by the year 2020, we should have 20% of the population living this way. But that message hasn't gotten out very loud and clear yet.
No.
That needs to be promoted in the biggest way because it is really a major breakthrough. There's no medicine, no other medical intervention that can lower heart attack risk or stroke risk as much as this lifestyle can do.
Yes. Well, Dr. Scharfenberg, thank you so much for being with us today, and it's always a pleasure being with you.
Thanks a lot.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week's program. Please invite your friends to tune in and join us each week here on Health and Longevity. Until next time, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.